State v. And is it Pallone or Pallone?
It is Pallone.
Pallone. State v. Pallone. And Stephen Watson will be representing Robert Pallone.
Good morning to the justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's, I think, wonderful to have a forum like this where we have students and both from the elementary school level and from the college level. There was a very interesting presentation given to the spectators before the justices entered the courtroom. And I, in light of the fact that we have so many young spectators in this court, I think it's very important to point out that the defense point of view in this case does not in any way attempt to say it's okay to use drugs. Not in any way. The issue that the defense brings is a constitutional issue. And in light of the fact that the students from Parkside and the criminal justice program are here, I think it's important to point out what appears in the record that was given to the Supreme Court, and that is that this encounter between the Village of Fontana police officers and the two young men who had stopped and parked their truck in the municipal parking lot, the encounter was very friendly. The gentlemen that were stopped and arrested testified in the court hearing that the officer was very polite. The officer, in turn, testified that the people he arrested were very polite. So I think it's important to understand that these encounters are sometimes, although it may involve criminal activity, friendly. With that introduction, I would like to move on to say this is an extremely difficult and complex case. I can't pretend to comprehend it all. The problem is every time you try and determine whether or not this was a lawful search under the Fourth Amendment, and you grab hold of an exception and you try and say, okay, this one works, some fact comes to light that makes it slip away. The first and most significant fact that poses trouble for the exceptions to the warrant requirement is that this was not a traffic stop. This truck was parked and stopped before the officers even approached it. It is not, therefore, an automobile exception case. The truck was stopped and it was parked. And we then move to the next more problematic issue, which is it a search incident to arrest? And the problem factually there is that the state has the burden of proof on a suppression motion to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that there was a custodial arrest. The phrase custodial arrest is a term of art, and I do not think that you can remove the word custodial from that and say it's dicta. It is a term of art, and State versus Fry speaks of the custodial arrest, as does all the United States Supreme Court cases. What is interesting is that Judge Kennedy said, or found as a fact, that when the officer walked up to Mr. Riff, who was drinking the beer, and said, gotcha, you're under arrest, he found that was a fact. But determining whether or not Mr. Riff was actually under arrest is a question of law. And the broader concern is, okay, if you're standing along, you're standing outside of your truck, you've turned it off, you've parked, you've gotten out, and you're drinking a beer, the police officer walks up and says, gotcha, you're under arrest. Does a person reasonably believe under those circumstances that they're under arrest? Many other things happen after this, but at that point, Judge Kennedy seems to conclude there's the arrest. Bear in mind that the state has a burden of proof. Officer Recknagel testified, for instance, that he could not remember when he placed the handcuffs on Mr. Riff. Some of the things that are considered in terms of a...
Counsel, can I just ask, but there is no question, at least from my reading, that your client was told that he was, are you saying he was never told that he was under arrest? You just said you're under arrest. Those actual words were used. So what would the reasonable person expect?
Justice Wilcox, I'm not sure that everybody could hear your question, but I...
Well, the question I asked was that he was actually, your client was actually told you're under arrest. So we're, and the facts are very important. So I'm asking what the reasonable person would have expected after you're told you're under arrest, and obviously you had open intoxicants in the motor vehicle. There was no question about that.
Mr. Riff, who is not the defendant in this case, was told, gotcha, you're under arrest.
Right.
Mr. Pallone, after the cocaine found, there's no question that Mr. Pallone was then cuffed and taken to the police station. In fact, Officer Recknagel testifies, I then arrested Mr. Pallone and took him to the police station. We don't challenge that that's not a custodial arrest. That clearly is. But under the totality of the circumstances, whether or not Mr. Riff was under arrest, Mr. Riff testified that he thought he was going to be given a ticket because that's what the officer told him, you know, I'm going to issue a citation, and then Mr. Riff was relieved that it was going to be a citation for one as opposed to the other. But he thought he was going to be given a ticket and he'd have to send back the money, have to send a check back in. That's what he thought. Mr. Riff testified that he believed that he was under arrest when he was cuffed. And he says that he was not cuffed until the cocaine was found. So the tricky issue in terms of what happened at the suppression hearing is not only was there a custodial arrest, but when did it occur? Did it occur right at the moment that Officer Recknagel walked up and said, gotcha, you're under arrest, and then, or did it occur after the cocaine was found, which... whether you find one way or the other, it makes an incredible difference constitutionally, and Judge Kennedy didn't make the finding with respect to that.
Why does it matter constitutionally?
It
matters. By the way, your client was not under arrest at any of these times, right?
That's correct.
No one said you're under arrest.
That's correct.
Could he leave?
Yes, he could leave. He certainly could leave. In fact, I think yes. It matters constitutionally because if there is, the exception is search incident to arrest. If there is a lawful custodial arrest, then the search of the car is justified, no question about it. If, however, under the circumstances, under the totality of the circumstances, a reasonable person would not believe that he was under arrest, then a search incident, then the arrest, then that doesn't, the facts do not bring it to the level of a lawful custodial arrest.
Well, let's just assume there was a lawful custodial arrest of Mr. Riff. They're searching the car, right?
Correct.
Do they have the authority to search everything in the car?
They have the authority to... there's going to be some... I submit not. I submit that they do not have the authority to search Mr. Riff's duffel bag. And what I believe to be the Fourth Amendment moment of truth in this case is when the officer goes back to the truck. He's on one side of the truck going into the truck. Mr. Riff is on the other side of the truck. Mr. Riff has his hand on the duffel bag.
You don't represent Mr.
I'm not responsible for anything I say. Mr. Pallone has his hand on his duffel bag.
Right.
At that moment, he's exercising his right of privacy in it. This is a duffel bag that's filled with his personal belongings.
We don't know that because it's closed.
That is not known.
Sealed, closed, opaque, I assume. Transparent duffel bag.
That is not known. But what Officer Recknagel testifies to at that moment, that is, Mr. Pallone has his hand on the bag, the police officer is looking at him, Mr. Pallone says, I want to take my bag, the police officer says, no, I'm going to search. What Officer Recknagel testified to was, quote, when I spoke with him, he was not calm. This is at the appendix, page 131. He spoke in kind of short sentences, like he was nervous. I guess I don't know how you can describe nervous other than the way he was talking, the way that he kept looking up, looking down, looking up, looked down at the bag, at myself. That's what I depicted to be nervous, end quote. The reason that that's significant is because this is not a furtive gesture. We can assume that there are many spectators in this courtroom today who have purses. Some may even have duffel bags. It is a perfectly natural movement as you get up to leave to grab those belongings. Let's say that you then add to that factual situation that a police officer is standing in front of you and says, no, don't leave, I'm going to search that duffel bag. Would it then not be ordinary and normal for somebody to look at the duffel bag, look at the police officer, and can you establish furtive gesture based on eye movements?
Well, what's important about us being nervous or furtive gestures?
I believe that there's nothing important about him being nervous. I think it's perfectly ordinary for somebody to be nervous in front of a police officer.
Well, you have a client who's not under arrest. He's a passenger in a car, vehicle. The driver, was Mr. Riff the driver?
Yes, he was.
Okay. But he wasn't driving at the moment. The driver has an alcoholic beverage, which is illegal, open, right?
Correct.
Okay. That's a violation.
Yes, it is.
Civil or criminal?
That is a civil violation.
Okay, civil violation. It's like driving too fast or passing through a stop sign.
Correct.
Except that it deals with having an open bottle of an intoxicant. Okay. You've got a passenger in the car. Passenger, no open bottle for the passenger?
No open bottle for the passenger.
Passenger has not done anything illegal, criminal or civil.
He has done nothing illegal, criminal or civil, and is not suspected by the officer of having done anything illegal.
All right. And he has a closed container, the duffel bag.
Yes, he does.
The passenger. Why aren't you just arguing that any passenger in a car where there's been, in effect, a traffic violation, here, a special kind of one, the police cannot search the passenger's purse or duffel bag? Is that your argument?
No, that is
okay.
Not my argument.
Why not? And what exactly is your argument?
I'll try and answer both those questions. That is not the defense argument, because I believe that there are circumstances, the factual patterns that could be created similar to this, where the search would be justified. If Mr. Pallone were to grab that duffel bag and start running away, you've got flight. You've got consciousness of guilt. Perhaps. I think a stronger argument could be made. If, in fact, there was a full custodial arrest
of
Mr. Riff, I believe an argument could be made that and here's the distinction. If Mr. Pallone did not have his hand on the duffel bag, if Mr. Pallone was in back of the truck and there was a lawful custodial arrest, my understanding of the law is that the officer could then search Mr. Pallone's duffel bag.
On the ground that he can search the entire car.
Correct.
Okay.
Pursuant to a lawful custodial arrest.
And open up everything.
And open up everything.
Well, you argued in your brief this is a Knowles case.
Yes, I have. And I've argued it's not a Houghton case. And yet I rely on statements from all those cases. And as I come closer to the defining argument, I guess I see it more as the only way that this can be justified is based upon Terry. In other words, that's why I say what I think the moment of truth is, was there enough suspicion? And the officer says he didn't have any articulable suspicion. What the officer said, it wasn't for safety, it wasn't for beer. The officer stated, and I referenced it in my brief, that he grabbed for his bag. I'm at page 5 of the brief.
Okay.
The officer's testimony as to why he searched the duffel bag was as follows. Mr. Pallone actually put his hands on the duffel bag, wanted to remove it, and he seemed nervous that there was something inside this bag that I wasn't supposed to know about or see, and that's my intention as to why I searched it. Why does that need to be protected constitutionally is because there's no limit to that. Anybody can appear nervous. Anybody can appear that they want to have their duffel bag or their purse.
Mr. Watson, wasn't there some other testimony by the officer also? The officer, as I remember, testified that one of the reasons that he searched the duffel bag was because he thought there might be further intoxicants in the duffel bag, and also there might be a weapon in the bag. Didn't he testify to that effect also?
He certainly did, Justice Crooks, and I think that what has to be borne in mind is that the officer's testimony is equivocal. He did testify to that in response to leading questions by the prosecutor, and he testified to the contrary in response to leading questions by me. The state has the burden of proof, and his testimony is equivocal on that point. And his testimony about this was my intention as to why I searched it is corroborated by Judge Kennedy's statement that he concludes from the facts that the officer had no intention of searching the duffel bag at all until his hunch took over.
Let me ask you another fact question so that I'm clear in my own mind. There was a 12-pack of beer also found, unopened.
Yes.
Was that found in the bed of the truck, or was it found in the cab?
The officer Recknagel testified that it was found in the bed of the truck and testified that it was partially opened, and then he said, my guess is there were two or three cans missing or bottles missing.
Was that found before the search of the duffel bag?
Yes, it was. And Mr. Riff and Mr. Pallone, Ms. Pallone didn't testify, Mr. Riff testified that the beer was right next to, it was in the middle of the bench seat inside the cab, and that he knows that because he had taken the beer out of, in other words, the beer that he was drinking, he had taken out of the 12-pack inside the car.
So there's conflicting testimony as to where the extra beer was found.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Yes, there is. I don't think there's a conflicting testimony that it was found before the
duffel
bag was searched. And there, you know, there's another interesting fact here, because if you look at the testimony of Mr. Riff, I believe he testifies that the officer asked him if he could go get the other beer in the car, and Mr. Riff says, sure.
No.
So... I just quickly want to make the point that one of the things that goes on here is, you know, there's a consent issue. If they had asked him for consent to search the duffel bag, we might have a very different outcome.
I want to get back to, I'm somewhat confused by your argument as opposed to your brief. In your brief, with your emphasis upon Knowles, you seem to be saying that this was nothing more than a routine traffic stop, and that therefore Knowles controls, and you can't do the search. And now you seem to be saying that this was not even a routine traffic stop, it was not a traffic stop at all, and there was not an arrest. Do I have this right so far? Are you
backing
a little bit away from Knowles?
I'm backing a little away from Knowles on the technical point that this was not a traffic stop. It is like a traffic stop in that it is a stop for a minor offense, and the constitutional principles attendant upon a stop for a minor offense apply.
Okay, I understand that. Now, then let me ask you this. I have not read the suppression hearing. Did the officer indicate that this was, in his mind, when he approached Mr. Rep, something more than a routine traffic stop?
He, without doubt, indicated the contrary. He indicated that he did not suspect that there was any criminal activity afoot. Other than that, he testified specifically that he did not have any information that there were drugs involved here, or any suspicion that there were drugs inside the truck.
Why did he say you're under arrest? Does he say that to everybody that he stops?
Well, that's
speeding?
That's disputed in the testimony. That's disputed. Mr. Riff says that he never said it. Okay. Judge Kennedy found, and we're stuck with that conclusion. And I don't know what he says all the time, but when you have it, gotcha, you're under arrest. It is, as Judge Kennedy stated, somewhat cavalier and not as likely to make a reasonable person believe that they were not going to be free to go. This was a friendly exchange.
So you think a legal question is presented in this case as to whether or not there was an actual arrest?
I think that is an extremely critical question of law, not determined in the trial court and of significance here.
But could I ask a question? Suppose Mr. Riff had been alone.
He got out of the truck and with the bottle, and the officer comes up and says, "Gotcha, you're under arrest." At that point, is the officer entitled to look in the cab of the truck or not?
If this court concludes that at that point there is a lawful custodial arrest, yes. And that's what I'm arguing, and I think is it. I want to find the case cited in my brief about, is it State versus Tompkins that discusses what is an arrest? Page 11 in my brief. It's the Wisconsin case that discusses, okay, here's what we look at when we talk about an arrest. And there is, by the way, there is a Wisconsin case which says an arrest is an arrest is an arrest. Come on. But I believe that that statement is no longer good law in light of the Knowles case and in light of Houghton. But the case that talks about what constitutes a custodial arrest, it said, you know, you can consider a lot of things. Were there handcuffs? Was there restraint of movement? Was there touching? Again, Officer Recknagel was asked, did you ever touch Mr. Riff prior to searching the duffel bag? And Officer Recknagel says, I can only assume I did if I put him into the squad car. But he can't remember when he handcuffed Mr. Riff. So there's equivocation. There's a failure of the burden of proof on custodial arrest.
Counsel, earlier you were discussing with Justice Crooks the equivocation of the testimony of the officer as to why he searched. Did he search for handguns? Did he search the bag because he thought there may be some contraband in there, or what was the rationale? I'm looking at part of the transcript that's in the appendix. And did the trial court make any finding as to reconcile that apparent discrepancy in the testimony?
Well, I believe that that's argued by the state in its brief, and
I know I want, but I want to.
And yes,
what your position is?
My position is yes, he did, and the reason that I say that is because this is not a written opinion. This is an oral decision. And the judge makes several findings. And at some point in his brief, he says, okay, now I'm going to rule. And he refers to there being essential facts and non-essential facts. But it cannot be argued that Judge Kennedy's words are, my conclusion from the facts seemed to be that before the man reached for the bag, he had no intention to search it. I'm not even sure he had an intention to search the car, but when the person reached for and tried to take that bag out, with the instincts of the officer took over, saying, whoa, he's trying to hide something. I'm interested. What is he trying to hide?
That's at page, I think, 162 of the appendix, and that's exactly what I was focusing on. What's your...
My opinion is that is a finding of fact.
And what does that finding of fact say?
That finding of fact says that there was no concern for safety, there was no concern for danger, there was no concern for further evidence of the ordinance violation of open intoxicants. Therefore, the underlying rationales discussed in Houghton, I'm not sure if I'm stating the right case, of, you know, the constitutional underpinning is there a need for officer safety? Is there a need to preserve evidence?
That's in the
and that's
case.
Evidence of a crime. We're talking open intoxicants. Now, let's say that you conclude and you say, well, Mr. Watson, it's in the wrong part of the brief. Bless you. It's in the wrong part of the brief, and it says, so we don't have to take account of that. I think even if you find it was not a finding of fact, it certainly is a significant statement. And it certainly highlights what we're talking about here, which is a minimal, minimal offense and a very intrusive search.
Could I follow up on my questions? Mr. Riff is alone in the car, hypothetically. The officer says, gotcha.
you're saying that there must be a custodial arrest on this offense before the officer can go and look in the cab to see if there's other alcoholic beverages?
I don't think so. I would change your, on your facts, I don't think so, because I'm let's say he had a concern for his safety. He can frisk Mr. Riff and he can freeze the situation and go into that car because Mr. Riff is standing relatively close to the outside of the vehicle. So what I'm saying is that let's not talk about Mr. Riff being alone in the car. Let's talk about the passenger who's not under arrest and not suspected of doing anything and just wants to go into the truck and get his duffel bag. That's the danger here. What about, I cite in my brief, and I think it's an important hypothetical, if two students are walking down the street in Madison and one has a duffel bag and the other student eats a candy bar and throws the candy wrapper on the ground, police officer walks up and says, gotcha, you're under arrest for littering, that's an ordinance. And then, I know you think it's far-fetched, but I don't think a police officer is going to do that. But if you uphold the trial court and court of appeals ruling, I think that you significantly weaken the rights of bystanders to their expectation of privacy.
But it does seem to me that if the duffel bag belonged to Mr. Riff, if the officer is entitled after giving, he probably hasn't written out a citation yet, but after the conversation, it seems to me the officer is entitled to look at the cab, in the cab, and if there are alcoholic beverages there, probably entitled to take them. And if there's a duffel bag there, you're going to want to know what's in that duffel bag and whether that's part of the evidence. Now, the fact that the duffel bag belongs to someone else, does that automatically say, no, this is different now?
Yes, it does change it, because the issue is reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment. And the whole justification for allowing intrusions is that the arrestee has a lowered expectation of privacy. Mr. Pallone was not under arrest. And so how do you justify that intrusion without there being a lawful custodial arrest?
Well, I think Justice Crooks alluded to the fact that the officer testified or alleged that he didn't know what was in that bag. Could have been more alcoholic beverages.
He did testify, and that goes to Justice Bradley's comment, well, is there any significance to Judge Kennedy's statement? My conclusion from the facts is he had no interest in searching it until he saw him try and take it out. And again, the state has the burden of proof to show a lawful custodial arrest, and the officer's testimony, without question, at best, is equivocal on the issue of whether he was, when the prosecutor asks him, are you concerned for your safety, guns, beer, he says yes. When the defense attorney says, well, no, you weren't really afraid of it, he says yes. So how do we really know? But we do know that this was a relaxed atmosphere for a minor offense. And are the constitutional justifications for this search present in such a factual situation? And I argue that they are not.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Nashold, Assistant Attorney General Nashold, representing the state.
May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Jennifer Nashold, and I represent the state of Wisconsin in this matter. The trial court and the Court of Appeals correctly decided this case. There is no lawful basis for suppressing the cocaine found in the defendant's duffel bag. The trial court properly concluded that this was a lawful search incident to the arrest of the driver, Mr. Riff, and the Court of Appeals properly held that the search was lawful because it was based on probable cause, specifically the Supreme Court's recent decision in Wyoming versus Houghton. each of these two theories, these independent theories, sustains the search that was conducted in this case, and I'll address them both. I'll begin with the search incident to arrest exception to the warrant requirement. First of all, it is clear that the driver was placed under arrest. There are two statutes which govern arrests in this type of situation. It is clear that the legislature has determined that a person may be arrested for a traffic violation. That's 345.22 of the Wisconsin statutes. In addition, a person may be arrested for an ordinance violation, and that statute is 800.02. It is beyond dispute that the officer may legally arrest the driver for an open container violation in this case. In addition, it's important to get immediately to this issue of whether there's such a thing even as a custodial arrest versus some other type of arrest. The state submits that there is no distinction whatsoever. The Court of Appeals made this very clear in a case called State v. King, and that decision is not affected at all by Knowles or any other case. Admittedly, courts have used phrases such as custodial arrest, but there is no distinction between a custodial arrest and another type of arrest. Indeed, the very definition...
Miranda?
Perhaps in the Miranda context, but even...
There may be a difference.
I'm not clear on that. I could possibly do a supplemental brief on that. For purposes of arrest, the very definition of arrest incorporates the idea of custody. And in Swanson, I think that was the name of the case that opposing counsel was trying to look for in finding the definition of arrest. But that definition of arrest is that a reasonable person in the defendant's position would consider him or herself to be in custody, considering the restraint imposed by the officer in the circumstances.
What were the circumstances here, besides the officer saying you are under arrest, that you think lead to the conclusion, or would lead a reasonable person to believe that this was an actual arrest?
The state's position is that the words "you're under arrest" was sufficient, but that even if it weren't, there was more here.
Once he said that, did he start to search Mr. Rick? Did he do the kind of things that we normally expect a police officer to do when he places somebody under arrest?
The officer testified that after saying to the driver, and I'm probably going to continue to do that, so I apologize in advance, but after he told Mr. Riff that he was under arrest, he told the other officer, Officer Jacobs, to bring the squad car to the scene, and that he put the driver into the squad car at that point. Indeed, Mr. Riff even testifies that the squad car was brought to the scene. And what was the purpose of bringing that squad car to the scene? To put the driver in there.
So what was he under arrest for?
He was under arrest for open intoxicants in a vehicle.
A beer?
Yes, bringing
a
beer.
Contraband?
Yes, it is. And we have briefed this issue.
A closed beer, a case of closed beer is contraband?
Well, as I stated in my brief, contraband depends on the context. Certainly a beer that is closed in a vehicle is not contraband, but when a person has just been lawfully arrested for open containers in a vehicle, that item is contraband.
Okay, so an open container is contraband?
If it's in a vehicle.
So did the officer suspect there was open beer running through the contents of the bag?
The officer did testify that he searched the duffel bag in order to look for alcohol or weapons. And although the...
Weapons?
Yes, he states, in response to a question posed by Attorney Watson, Mr. Watson states, and this is at page 1843 of the suppression hearing, Attorney Watson says, is it a fair statement that when you opened the duffel bag, two things that you were looking for were weapons and evidence related to the open intoxicants charge? Yes, sir. Now, in normal circumstances, sure.
If your position is that he's under arrest, then it seems to me your position is also that the officer had a right to search the entire vehicle and all the containers.
That's right. I think Belton makes that clear.
And it's irrelevant what he was looking for. He had a right to open it.
That's right. It's an objective test, and I was going to get to that. I was responding to the suggestion that he wasn't looking for that.
What's the objective test?
The objective test is whether it's basically a bright line rule expressed in Belton that when a person is placed under arrest, the officer has the right to search the compartment of the vehicle.
Anything that he finds.
Basically, what Belton says is that the officer may search any container, and a container is defined as any object capable of holding another object. And courts have said that actual accessibility is not what is important. For example, in Frye, in Murdoch, that's not the issue. That basically it's a bright line rule, and that we need something for officers to be able to follow. That's a very simple rule.
Okay, let me just test the rule. Okay, let us suppose that when I go home tonight to Madison, I speed. I'm on my I-90 system, and I do 72 miles an hour.
I don't think you'd ever do that.
Okay. What? You don't think I'd ever do it? That's very simple. You just got my boat. All right. So I'm driving along, and I am stopped. Ordinarily, I'd get a citation.
That's right.
The officer, it's the same officer in this case, and he likes to arrest people. And so he puts me, he says, Gotcha on my radar. You're under arrest. Pulls, gets another squad car, etc. My car is just going to be, I will be okay. My car will be loaded. And just have boxes and bags, a variety of things. And because
confidential
papers, right. Can the officer search that car? I'm under arrest.
Yes, except the trunk. That is what Belton says, and that is what the legislature says. The legislature says that you may be put under arrest for a traffic citation. Of course, that doesn't usually happen.
I'm just trying to test you. So if I go buy groceries and I do 27 miles an hour in a school zone, he, she can arrest me and search all my grocery bags.
Yes.
Okay, and I don't have a trunk. I've got a station wagon. They can search everything.
Yes, I think that's clear under this court's authority and under the authority of the United States Supreme Court.
But what meaning, then, does Knowles have if it is so easily subverted? Because Knowles refers to a traffic stop.
Right.
It says you can't do a search.
Knowles states that you cannot conduct a search incident to a citation.
Right. Now, so if a police officer can get around Knowles by simply arresting everybody, haven't you made Knowles meaningless?
I don't believe so.
Not meaningless to an officer who wants to search.
I think that it's very clear from Knowles that Knowles leaves room for the notion that an officer may arrest pursuant to a traffic violation and conduct a search incident to arrest. But the officer may not simply issue a citation and then conduct a search. And that...
The answer to Justice Babbage is yes. All you have to do is make the arrest.
Yes, I believe so.
So if you stop a car containing three blacks and the officer doesn't like the looks of them, instead of issuing them a normal traffic citation, he can say, you're under arrest, and then search the entire car.
I think that would perhaps present an equal protection problem, but under the Fourth Amendment... An officer can make a lawful arrest of a person for a traffic violation and can conduct a search incident to arrest.
Let's say that Justice Babbage and Justice Wilcox are traveling back to Madison together. They got lots of boxes. This would never happen either, but let's just type that Justice Babbage is going 66 miles an hour.
Inadvertently.
Listening to music on the radio and his mind just wanders and...
That would be slow. I'm sharper than a serpent's tooth.
And if I may continue with my hypothetical.
the officer stops and says, you're under arrest. Does that mean that every bag and every box in that car of Justice Wilcox as a passenger can be searched?
Yes. Belton does not make any distinction between the belongings of a passenger versus the arrestee. In addition, Belton does not state that you can search an arrestee's containers pursuant to an arrest. It says you may search any container. It does use the word any. And one thing that's important to note is when you read Houghton, when Houghton is looking at probable cause precedent, the court notes that I believe it was a case by the name of Ross that it examines and says, look, if you're going to, if you're looking at precedent in order to get guidance as to what the passenger's rights are in a vehicle, and you're looking at this case that has drawn out this automobile exception, you would think that if they meant to draw a distinction between passengers and the arrestee's belongings, they would have drawn such a distinction. Well, this is certainly true in examining Belton. If they wanted to draw that distinction, you would think they would have done so, but the language is very broad, and the intention was to create a bright line rule because of the ambiguity that had been rampant in that area of the law.
Doesn't that get to one of the questions before us, and that is whether the Belton rule, which would allow, in my hypothetical, the passenger who wasn't under arrest, I assume if the passenger's backpack, the passenger's briefcase, the passenger's boxes, the passenger's suitcase, that's under Belton. Then you have, is it Schimmel, C-H-I-M-E-L, that's the competing case in this case before us.
That's right.
And Schimmel says, hey, no, you can't do that. It says it has to, you can only search that which is what, in the immediate control of the of the defendant, right?
Oh, that's right.
And so that's one of the things that we may have to decide. Which line of cases do we adopt here? Do we take the Belton view or do we take the Schimmel view? Is that right?
That's right. And I honestly don't think it would make a tremendous difference which of those two cases this court uses to analyze this case, because defense counsel and I dispute the idea of what is in the immediate control. He talks about arm's length. Well, I don't think that that can be taken literally, that kind of language, that immediate control, immediate presence has had a broad meaning. For example, in Frye, this court held that it can include the locked, what do you call it? area
locked
where
container?
Glove compartment.
Glove compartment, thank you. The locked glove compartment of a vehicle. And in Murdoch, the court said that it can include a drawer in a pantry, a closed drawer, even though the person who was arrested was in handcuffs on the ground.
Let's stay with a hypothetical in an automobile. Let's have the automobile a sports utility vehicle. And so here I am, again, as a passenger in a sports utility vehicle. And my briefcase, which I really don't want searched, is in the back, what would often be a trunk, but in the back of a sports utility vehicle. Under the Schimmel test of immediate control, the officer, having arrested the driver for going 66 miles an hour, search incident to that arrest.
I still think that based on Frye and Murdoch, I still think that based on Frye and Murdoch, the answer to that question would be yes. And that even in the Schimmel types of cases, Schimmel is still search incident to arrest, and courts haven't drawn distinctions between passengers' belongings. At least the Supreme Court or this court has not drawn a distinction between passengers' belongings and the arrestee's belongings. And I think one thing that's important to note in addressing the concerns, the very legitimate concerns of Justice Bablich and Justice Abramson about officers arresting people for minor offenses, they are allowed to do so now, and yet you have to trust the judgment of the officers to a certain extent. They don't want to arrest everybody they see for speeding. It's not worth their resources. They've got bigger fish to fry. They want to get the ticket issued and get out of there. And
well, suppose they suspect me of being a drug dealer. then and they don't have enough to get a probable cause warrant to search my house or my office or my business. So they see me sailing down the highway and...
With a broken taillight.
Exactly. With a broken taillight. That's the favorite one. They can stop me, arrest me, and search the entire car.
The legislature has permitted them to do so. The legislature that allows the arrest for that type of offense and the Supreme Court by saying that you can search incident to arrest. Assuming there's no difference between a custodial and a non-custodial arrest, that an arrest is an arrest, as King says, then yes, that is the situation.
Counsel, let me draw this out a little bit more. Instead of an automobile, let's assume that two people are walking down the street, obviously companions. One of them's carrying a duffel bag. The officer observes the other one smoking a marijuana cigarette.
Smells it all.
So he stops them, and he places that person under arrest. Is he entitled to search the duffel bag of the companion?
I think that the state would have a harder time arguing that in that case. Because
why is that?
Because there is a lowered expectation of privacy in a vehicle, and that extends not only to the driver but the passengers. In Houghton, the court made that very clear that the reasonable expectation of privacy is diminished not only for the driver but also for the passenger. And therefore, I don't know that this court or other courts would look, and I don't know that it'll look kindly on my position in this case either, but kindly on that scenario in particular where it's not... where it's not a vehicle. But I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility. I just don't think it's very likely that an officer would want to engage in that kind of activity.
I agree. But here, as Mr. Watkins has argued, it's appears to be almost coincidental that there is a vehicle involved because, as he points out, the vehicle was stopped already and due to no actions by the officer. Mr. Riff was out of the automobile, correct?
Right, but the offense...
Was this a stop incident to a traffic arrest, or was this simply no different than confronting two people on a street?
Well, it related to the vehicle in that the Mr. Riff had an open container and he was exiting his vehicle, but the search took place of the vehicle. So, yes, the vehicle is important, that this was a... search based on both probable cause and search incident to arrest, and the courts have interpreted the search incident to arrest in the vehicle context as very expansive. So yes, I think it is significant.
But could you help me understand the difference between the Schimmel case and the Belton case with regard to the occupant? I think that the Schimmel case is a case where the occupant...
guidance for citizens. And so it was just an interpretation of Schimmel, and it wasn't even in contradiction to Schimmel, as this court stated in Fry.
I don't know this, but I was under the impression that there are some cases that suggest that Belton is limited only to the circumstance where the police officer initiated the passenger getting out as opposed to voluntarily getting out.
There
cases have limited Belton only to that circumstance.
Some cases have, as are set forth in opposing counsel's brief, but I think there are more cases, including several federal circuit courts, that go the other way, that say it doesn't make a difference if the person has already exited the vehicle at the time that the first contact with the officer occurs. The Belton decision discusses occupant. It also discusses recent occupant. And I think as long as you've got the requisite temporal and physical proximity of the arrestee to the vehicle, that's really what Belton was trying to get at, that you want the person to have been an occupant of the vehicle and to be in proximity with the vehicle. This isn't a Tompkins-type situation where the person had left the vehicle and been in a bar drinking for 15 minutes at the time the arrest occurred. This was a situation where he was immediately exiting the vehicle, even according to his own testimony, and the officer approached him and said, "Gotcha." Now, we also don't know when he said, "You're under arrest." Opposing counsel states that he said, "Gotcha, you're under arrest." That's not necessarily clear from the record.
Does the state take the position here that the officer had probable cause to believe that the duffel bag contained contraband?
That the duffel bag did?
Yeah.
No. That the box inside the duffel bag, yes.
Right, but prior to the search, the police did not have probable cause.
I'm sorry, I was thinking of the search incident to arrest doctrine. Under the probable cause theory, the officer had probable cause to believe that anything in the vehicle contained contraband. So yes, under the automobile exception.
The officer had probable cause to believe that anything in the vehicle contained an open bottle or can of
a... That's right.
Why?
Because that is what the automobile exception says. That if you have reason to believe that, is your question getting at the container aspect of it, or is it getting, because the man, Mr. Riff, exited that vehicle with an open container. He was drinking from it as he exited. The officer found a 12-pack of beer inside the truck that was missing bottles. Where are the bottles? They're inside the car or the truck somewhere, presumably. The officer had probable cause to believe that the truck contained evidence of a crime or a contraband.
So you don't even need the automobile exception in your reasoning.
You've got hope.
Well, you've got probable cause.
You've got to get inside the driver's car. And I don't know that you could do that just under probable cause to believe the duffel bag contained...
So the only way you know that there's missing beer cans or bottles is to get inside the car.
I don't know that would be the only way, but I think it's a legitimate way to discover that.
Right. Then you've got probable cause once you get in the car. You can get in the car under the auto exception.
That's right. Yes.
Could I ask? I think we understand the value of a bright line rule where you say when there is arrest and you get to search certain areas. But... where you draw that bright line does seem to leave the possibility of a great deal of abuse, things that would be quite unsettling to the public at large if, in fact, it was applied in every case where there was an arrest.
Well, I
how do you reconcile it?
I simply don't think that this case, if decided in the state's favor, significantly changes the status quo, because the legislature has deemed it lawful to search a person's vehicle incident to a traffic violation, to arrest a person for a traffic violation or for an ordinance violation. And incident to arrest, you may search a vehicle. That's very clear authority.
But the law does frown on pretextual arrests, does it not?
Well, the idea of a pretextual arrest, Supreme Court precedent establishes that the officer's subjective beliefs are insignificant, that basically if there's an objective reason to stop someone or to arrest someone, that's all that the officer needs.
Spanish Hill, several years ago, I examined whether these arrest statutes are valid. And I think, as best I remember it, that if there isn't a disorderly conduct that is something that's disturbing the public peace, I think I found some real problems about arrest for violations of civil offense statutes. Have you had any experience with that?
I haven't, and I don't know if this was in an opinion or not. I don't remember seeing...
No, it was not.
Okay. The statutes clearly permit it. The defendant has not challenged the constitutionality of those statutes, and I see no basis for saying that they would be unconstitutional. As a matter of fact, this court has said that those statutes are constitutional unless told otherwise by the Supreme Court. Let me see if I can find that. In City of Milwaukee versus Nelson, a custodial arrest for a civil forfeiture is constitutional. Since my warning light is on, I just wanted to get to a brief point that was raised by defense counsel in a reply brief, and so this is my only opportunity to respond to it. The defendant cited a definition of crime in analyzing the probable cause exception, a definition of crime that appears in, I believe it is 939, I'm sorry, 939.22, and that definition of crime is limited as expressed in the very statute that he cites, 939.22.6. It applies only to chapters 939 to 948 and to chapter 951. It does not apply necessarily to all context, in particular the Fourth Amendment context. The Court of Appeals has stated this in a case by the name of State v. West. In that case, the court said that definition of crime has a limited applicability, and it then went on to define crime using a dictionary for purposes of determining whether someone had committed a crime while on bail in prohibition of the statute, which doesn't allow people to commit crimes while out on bail. And so I think that that's what the court should do here, is use a more generic definition of crime, not that particular definition of crime is set forth in the statute, and also not the definition of contraband that is in the warrant statute, that is not related to the probable cause exception. In addition, the defendant contraband uses a case by the name of Voschart. I urge this court to read that case very carefully, because the quotes that are taken from that case are completely out of context. And that case dealt with not with the probable cause exception, but actually with the statute defining contraband for purposes of whether an officer may destroy contraband once a suppression motion is granted and where a warrant is defective. So that case does not have applicability in this context. Once again, I urge this court to basically adopt either the reasoning of the trial court or the Court of Appeals in this case.
Just before you conclude, I'd like to get back to Knowles for a moment, because it seems that we have left it at a stage in our discourse here that Knowles is easily, what's the word I'm looking for, not subverted, but you can get around it. Maybe subverted is the word I'm looking for. And I would suspect that you would agree that the Knowles Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, does not want its decision in Knowles to be subverted. It truly meant what it said, that, you know, when there's a stop, when there's a traffic stop, that you can't search. Now, how would the Supreme Court, Supreme Court respond to the kind of questions that we've been putting to you in order to maintain the viability of Knowles?
With all due respect, Your Honor, I really don't agree with the characterization of the state's position being a subversion of Knowles. I really do believe that Knowles contemplated a situation that involves a search incident to a citation. In fact, Iowa had a statute that allowed a search incident to a citation, and I don't think that the Knowles court had a problem with the idea of arresting someone and conducting a search incident to arrest. That holding was very limited and just said you cannot search incident to a citation, and the statute doesn't give you authority to do so. So So I don't think that the state's position would be retreating from Knowles. If anything, I think that it embraces Knowles by saying, if you're, you know, basically, if you don't arrest, then you don't get to search. If you do arrest, you do get to search.
Yes. With regard to Knowles, the flip side is Houghton. And my recollection of Houghton is there's deals with the probable cause, you need probable cause, the search for contraband or evidence of a crime.
That's right.
The argument, contrary to your position, is look, evidence of a crime, open intoxicants is a civil forfeiture, not evidence of a crime. And then you get to beer is contraband. I mean, I think the position of your opposing counsel is beer is not contraband, and you want this court to adopt
I think that
a
this
rule
court,
that beer is contraband.
Right, either contraband or evidence of a crime, using, as I said, a more generic definition of crime, perhaps a definition from the dictionary, as the court did in State v. West, that encompasses the idea of civil forfeiture. And there is precedent for this. For example, the statute that codifies Terry, that this court has said codifies Terry, talks about you need reasonable suspicion to believe that a crime has been committed. Well, courts have allowed stops of vehicles based on reasonable suspicion and use the term crime broadly to encompass the notion of traffic offenses, civil forfeitures, ordinance violations. And so I don't think that that's unprecedented, and I think the Court of Appeals approach in West was right on target, that you don't need to look at that definition of crime that's in that particular statute, which, you know, as I stated, only applies to certain chapters.
So you want us to say crime means any offense against the government?
Well, I have a definition of crime from a dictionary. something along those lines.
Sure. And government means city, state. That takes care of your forfeiture. Takes care of your non-criminal offenses that the state provides. It takes care of criminal offenses.
Yeah, something along those lines. Exactly.
Thank you.
I see that my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Nashold. Mr. Watson, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think the problem, we have to remember, Mr. Pallone is a criminal defendant in this case. The statute's applicable to whether or not beer is contraband, and the statute's applicable to whether or not open intoxicants is a crime or is not a crime, are to be interpreted strictly in his favor. You know, is beer contraband? Well, of course, it's legal to drink beer if you're of a legal age. It's illegal to drink beer while you're inside a car or in a public place. It is legal to drive an automobile, but it is illegal to drive that automobile 2 miles over the limit. Does that make an automobile contraband when you're strictly construing it against the defendant? No, I believe it can't. And, you know, if ordinances are crimes, and somebody's 3 miles per hour over the limit, they're a criminal. I think that's a dangerous road. I need to point out that, first of all, Houghton does not apply. This was not a stop. Houghton requires the predicate of an automobile stop. This is not a Houghton case. It cannot be controlled by Houghton, although you can look at some of the language in it. And secondly, here's what I'm quoting now from Belton. And I believe this is at 2864, so that would be 101 Supreme Court 2864. And this is the controlling opinion or the majority opinion. The lawful custodial arrest justifies the infringement of any privacy interest the arrestee may have. It's right out of Belton and not out of a dissent in Belton. And the significance there is the hypotheticals posed by Justice Babbage and Justice Abraham and Chief Justice Abrahamson were, I'm in a car, alone. Well, that's the facts of this case are slightly different because Mr. Riff is the putative arrestee, not Mr. Pallone. So there is no constitutional justification that allows this search. And the final point is, if all that it takes is for an officer to say you're under arrest, you are opening up a tremendous amount of latitude for abuse for relatively minor infractions. And I think no matter what Supreme Court cases you look on Fourth Amendment law, no matter how you look at them, that's not what they're intending, that's not what they're driving for.
If they had found additional open beer cans, what would that do? Would that give them two citations or three citations or five, number of the open beers? If you're looking for additional evidence, do you need additional evidence here?
Absolutely not. The officer testified, again, his testimony is equivocal, so I won't belabor the point. But I think if just to look at common sense, how can we say with a straight face that that officer was looking for evidence of beer inside of the duffel bag? He had all the evidence he needed. The man, Mr. Riff, was standing outside the car drinking a beer. The police officer walked up and said, gotcha. And, you know, here's another thing. We're talking about immediate control. Do you need immediate... Well, what happens is Mr. Riff gets sent back to the back of the truck, or, as Mr. Officer Recknagel testifies, at some point is placed in the squad, although he's not sure when. So there is no sense of getting this need to get in at what is immediately under the control. And again, Belton specifically carves out or specifically describes the justification as an infringement of any privacy interest the arrestee may have. So I think that's very significant. Belton also says we in no way undermine Schimmel.
What should the officers have done here?
I think that the officers could have done several things. They could have asked for consent, although then would have been an issue as to whether or not they could have frozen the situation and requested a warrant. They could have asked for consent. I think
a warrant for what?
To search the duffel bag.
For what?
Well, isn't that the question? Isn't that the question? That's why, I mean, it wouldn't happen. It may come closer to them asking for consent. In State versus Williams, this Supreme Court said, the court in Knowles held that police officers may not conduct a search of a vehicle incident to a traffic citation accompanying a routine traffic stop. And then, of course, we get into the problem, well, does Knowles apply because this wasn't a routine traffic stop? But what Knowles is really talking about is minor offenses. And are we certainly on different facts, if there's some tip that Mr. Pallone is possessing cocaine, then we're not going to care about police abuse, or we're not going to worry about the officer stepping on anybody's toes. And you want to allow them the latitude to search. But where there's nothing to suggest anything, and the what's present objectively is open intoxicants, I believe the search is not justified. The watchword is reasonableness.
Chief, let me ask a question.
Justice Prosser.
Suppose I characterize your position this way. I'd like to have you respond. Your position is that when the officer saw Mr. Riff with an open container, he should simply have been given a written citation and permitted to go back in the car and drive off with potentially alcoholic beverages in the car. Is that correct or not?
No, that's not correct. These two passengers were stopping in a municipal parking lot going to a bar that's behind it.
But sooner or later, he's going to drive away. He didn't live there in the parking lot.
Well, but had the officer said, you kind of smell like you've been drinking, Mr. Riff. Can I give you a PBT, or would you do some field tests for me? Have you been then we create a whole different thing. And of course, if safety, that is safety on the roads, becomes an issue, we get a different situation. Because had he given him a test, had he given him field tests, and there was probable cause for an OWI arrest, then again, very different outcome, very different argument.
Thank you, Mr. Watson. Thank you, Ms. Nashold. That completes the argument. In the first case, we are in the first.